Good morning. I'm Marty Derlin with the KVNF News for Friday, August 9th, 2013. The Delta County Independent reports that at a July 31st meeting in Delta, owners of grazing permits in the Dominguez Escalante National Conservation Area advised BLM public lands managers not to, quote, micromanage agricultural uses on those lands. According to the Independent, the meeting was held to address biological systems and grazing in the area through its draft resource management plan. One of the alternatives being considered in the draft RMP would regulate how many guard dogs have to be used with sheep flocks. Grazing owners at the meeting reportedly told the BLM that decisions should be left up to sheep owners. Ranchers also advised the BLM to better distinguish their definitions of trailing and drifting livestock and offered suggestions for improving how the agency manages bighorn sheep reproduction. Delta County Commissioner Doug Atchley, also on the National Conservation Area Advisory Council, reminded the BLM yet again that the county wants continued grazing rights on the Dominguez Escalante lands. Atchley also said the BLM's management plan should consider private property rights. The oil and gas industry says it's trying to focus on new ways to reach out to an increasingly skeptical public. Community concern is rising as hydraulic fracturing moves into more and more populated areas of the Front Range. Benta Berkland attended the Rocky Mountain Energy Summit in Denver this week and has more on how the industry is hoping to reshape its image and change the dialogue on fracking.
The annual conference brings together energy leaders from across the country, and much of the discussion this year focused on public anxiety over fracking. Marty Durbin is the president of America's Natural Gas Alliance, a Washington, D.C.-based lobbying group. He says the oil and gas industry can do better.
There are legitimate concerns that people have some empathy. They're not bad people, nor are we, obviously. But I think more broadly as an industry, we've got to be clear in our statements here. This is no longer a conversation about will we or won't we be producing this resource. We are.
The Nature Conservancy's chief scientist, Peter Kariva, told the crowd to be humble and go beyond the numbers.
It's clear the public is not technical. Fine. But don't be arrogant. You've got to approach it with a patience and not start by saying, if only you understood.
The oil and gas industry says it's a pivotal time, especially in places such as Colorado. Residents in several communities along the Front Range are poised to vote on 5-year fracking moratoriums this fall. Longmont voters have already banned the practice. Kelly Giddens is with the group Citizens for a Healthy Fort Collins. She says she wants more studies on how fracking impacts public health, the environment, and property values.
Whether you're drilling for oil or gas, you're using very, very toxic carcinogenic chemicals that we already know are carcinogenic. So, you know, introducing that into neighborhoods where children are playing and eating and breathing and, you know, that's seems problematic to people.
Giddens says she's also disappointed that state lawmakers didn't pass stricter rules this year. Democratic Representative Matt Jones of Longmont agrees. He wants to see legislation to increase fines and the number of well inspections. The two issues were brought up during the last session but failed.
I think we could have done a lot better. It was very frustrating. You know, all we're asking for is for public health to be a priority over people making profits from oil and gas companies, and we didn't seem to be able to get very far.
But state officials and Governor John Hickenlooper say Colorado already has some of the strictest rules and environmental standards in the country. Mike King heads the Colorado Department of Natural Resources. He says there's an understandable fear when an unfamiliar industrial process comes near urban communities, but he thinks the debate is starting to shift.
The sense I get is that some of the dynamics that we were dealing with during the height of the Gasland One era have died down, and we're having a more reasonable discussion about the real impacts of oil and gas, both positive and negative.
King says companies shouldn't dismiss their critics and should try to go above and beyond what's required by law.
This is not a public relations process. This is a community and family outreach process. They need to make these communities understand that they are members of the community, they're vested in the community, they're concerned about their air quality for their own children as well as for the other members of the community. And I think once that level of outreach at the retail level begins to occur, I think that the relationship between industry and some of these communities will change.
The energy sector is rapidly evolving, according to industry experts. Jeff Navin was the chief of staff to former Energy Secretary Stephen Chu. He spoke at the summit and says there's too much focus on regulation and turf wars.
And it seems to be this big fight between renewable energy versus fossil fuels. Well, the future of energy is going to be very different than that. It's going to be fragmented. The pie's going to grow. There's going to be lots of room for lots of new entrants and lots of players. The old assumptions are just going to turn out to be wrong. The old coalitions are going to fall apart and new coalitions are going to form.
And in a nod to reaching out, oil and gas attendees publicly invited Democratic 2nd Congressional Congressman Jared Polis to the conference. Polis recently tangled with the industry after suing to stop a drilling rig from operating near his vacation home. And while it's not exactly a new coalition, Polis has since withdrawn the suit and did show up at the conference. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
The Montrose Daily Press reports a former Delta County Sheriff's deputy and police officer has been arrested on charges of sexually abusing a child over a number of years in Delta and Montrose counties. The man, 44-year-old Kevin Cundiff, is facing felony charges and is currently free on an $85,000 bond. The Daily Press reports Cundiff worked for the Delta County Sheriff's Office from October 2008 to 2011, after which he left to work for the Delta Police Department. Cundiff also worked at the Ouray Police Department from 2004 to 2007 as a reserve deputy. According to the Daily Press, the alleged abuses occurred at homes in Delta County and Olathe. According to the Denver Post, the death of a Colorado man in 2012 of West Nile virus has been traced to blood the man received while being treated for cancer. A report by the Centers for Disease Control says the man, who was being treated with chemotherapy and a stem cell transplant, received blood that was tainted with the virus. Though the blood had been screened for West Nile before being used, the test evidently did not catch the virus. The Post reports the man ultimately died of encephalitis caused by West Nile. The CDC's report says it's likely he didn't get the virus from mosquitoes since he was in the hospital for 4 weeks before his illness started. Although the nation's blood supply has been screened for West Nile since 2009, the CDC's report calls for a closer study of the blood screening procedure and calls for physicians to be on the lookout for symptoms of the virus. The case of the Colorado man is only one of 12 West Nile cases associated with blood transfusions since 2003, but the CDC report says it appears to be the first fatal one. The Denver Post also reports a collection of more than 1,000 haiku will be headed for Mars after a Colorado University-sponsored contest. The winning poems from the university's Laboratory for Atmospheric and Space Physics Center in Boulder will ride on NASA's upcoming Mars Atmosphere and Volatile Evolution Mission, or MAVEN for short. The five top haiku winners included the British blogger Benedict Smith and the American poet Vanna Bonta. The mission's launch is scheduled for November. Here's the haiku that received the most votes from the public. It's by Benedict Smith of the United Kingdom. It's funny. They named Mars after the god of war. Have a look at Earth. The Aspen Times reports the cleanup of oil from a tanker truck spill on Loveland Pass over the weekend could take weeks. The spill is now estimated at 6,000 gallons of unleaded and diesel fuel, 2,000 more than initially thought. In some places, the fuel was up to 4 inches deep, according to authorities. The Times reports drivers heading over the pass since the spill have reported a noticeable smell of gasoline, although the area is relatively dry. Colorado State Patrol spokesperson Nate Reed said crews will have to take dirt from the mountainside and bring it to a facility to dispose of it, which will take time. The Times reports the spill could have been worse, as no fires were caused and the fuel so far doesn't seem to have reached the Snake River. On Friday, August 2nd, a bunch of domesticated chickens were mysteriously left on Stevens Gulch Road, just north of Paonia, seemingly to fend for themselves. A picture of the flock appeared online, and a flurry of social media activity from area residents soon followed, prompting the obvious question, what do you do with stranded chickens? KVNF's Travis Bubenik reports on where some of those birds wound up.
We were lost as to what do we do?
Local resident Carol Pierce stumbled upon the chickens as she was driving through the area, but she wasn't the first one to spot the wandering birds.
There was a cowboy up there on his horse, and he had his two dogs, and he said they were here yesterday. He said, yeah, they got dumped yesterday. And I said, well, so were those two dead ones laying there? And he said, no.
Not sure what to do, she called around to a local vet, the sheriff's office, who told her they weren't sure who to contact either, and even a local butcher who raises and sells chickens.
She didn't want anything to do with it, and she was real kind and said, you can't rescue the world.
Still, Carol says she felt compelled to find the chickens a home. Her posting on a local internet message board spawned hundreds of comments, with many people saying they could use the free chickens or knew someone who could, Cindy Sorensen being one of them.
Let's see, we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
The day before yesterday, we gave away about 50 chickens. 50 chickens? So 2 days ago, 50 chickens left, and then 20 some chickens left yesterday. So this is what's left on. Did you see any eggs this morning, Kai?
I didn't come out this morning.
Let's go around and see if there's any eggs up front.
Cindy says of the 96 chickens she scooped up from Stevens Gulch Road, some of them were older and starting to lose their feathers. Others were healthier, though they weren't laying many eggs.
But they've been stressed. I mean, they didn't have any water, they didn't have any food, so they were not too happy. There was dead chickens in the brush. There was probably, I would say, 8 to 11 chickens down there. I don't know how many.
But she didn't spend 3 hours on a Friday evening cornering and catching chickens just because she felt bad for the birds.
I know a lot of families over in the valley that needed food, and that was the main reason that I decided to act on it, was because there's some families here that need, you know, substance.
She admits it was a pretty comical scene, the chickens running under her truck, into the bushes, her son Kai scaring them out with a rock. But she's also well aware that letting animals loose can be a problem, especially when predators like coyotes and foxes get a taste and are tempted to come around more often. She says letting them go that way is indeed an option, but mainly a lost opportunity.
You know, I understand why you get rid of old laying chickens. You can't feed if they're not producing. But, you know, I think that there's a lot of people in the valley who are hungry that could use the food.
If nothing else, she says, the ordeals taught her that there are other, possibly more collaborative ways to both manage animals and address hunger issues in the North Fork Valley.
We are a very creative bunch of people here. I mean, there's lots of things that you can do with it, you know? Maybe you get a person who knows how to butcher chickens, and you bring that person in, and you have a workshop, and you can just set up a processing line, and then put them in a freezer. You know, I have empty freezers here. That's something that could have been done.
But it does seem like a big waste. There's hungry people. The woman I called who butchers chickens, she said, it just depends on if they're, you know, willing to do the work to use that meat, which you would imagine there probably are people that are.
Carol and Cindy were, of course, only two of the many people who helped find the chickens a home. As of Wednesday, Cindy still had about 17 of the 96 chickens she picked up left, but was expecting to give those away by the end of the week. For KVNF News, I'm Travis Bubenik.
The Delta County Independent reports that a criminal investigation of the chicken dumping incident is currently underway. Delta County Sheriff Fred McKee told the Sentinel that authorities have a suspect in the case and that once the department believes enough evidence has been collected, the county will bring a prosecution on animal cruelty charges. And that's the end of our newscast today. I'm Marty Derlin. Thanks for listening.